Hello, listeners out in the podcast world. This is Devin.
This is Casey.
From Between the Reels, giving you this week's news, review, and as well as movies from the vault.
So get excited. We are here with a fresh batch of current, up-to-date movie news. So get excited. We're going to start off with a bit of good news. Top Gun 2 has fallen apart.
This is wonderful news, in my opinion.
We are all sad that Tony Scott had to commit suicide for this to happen.
Yeah, that's tragic.
And our hearts are with his family, but the fact that this pretty much collapsed, Top Gun 2, is an absolute blessing for the rest of us who are fans of the original Top Gun.
But I think it's interesting, though, is that if you are a fan of the original Top Gun, Top Gun will be released in 3D.
Yes.
As part of its anniversary, kind of like Jurassic Park, that's coming out pretty soon as well. So,
now, to me, this feels a little bit like a George Lucas move, something that doesn't need to happen, changes that don't need to occur. Yet they're going to go ahead and do them anyway. I love the original Top Gun, one of my top favorite movies. It doesn't need to be remade.
No. Yeah, and especially in 3D. I mean, that's the thing about it is it's like post-conversion 3D. What difference does it really make except for it to be a cash grab?
Absolutely.
So
I don't care if the missiles fly at me or not. to go with that, we have some great news if you're a fan of Mortal Kombat. Now, not the original ones, because I don't know that there are any fans of the original Mortal Kombat movies.
I was when I was like 12, and then when I saw them, 10 years later, I realized how bad it was.
Yeah. When you're right there at puberty at the height of the popularity of the games, they were awesome.
Especially much better than the Street Fighter movie that came out with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
You shut your mouth. That was Raul Julia's last movie.
Sadly.
That, what a one to go out on.
I know.
But if you were a fan of Kevin... And I'm going to butcher his name, but it's Kevin Tancherone.
I think that's what it is.
Completely butchered. But he did a fan-made trailer called Mortal Kombat Rebirth.
Yes.
That was fantastic. It was very gritty, very down-to-earth. Everyone loved it. And that got the attentions of the people that make Mortal Kombat and licensed him to do a web series leading up to the release of the game that came out last year, the video game. And that went over incredibly well, so now it's set him up to do a second series, second web series, continuing what he did before, and has garnered him about $40 to $50 million budget for a new reboot of the Mortal Kombat franchise in movies. And I cannot tell you how excited I am about this after watching his stuff.
So I think it's great because at first I was a little sad the fact there's only going to be $40 to $50 million because that sounds like a very low budget, B movie type thing. But I think if you restrict it, I think with what he's done so far, I think that allows, it doesn't constrain him, or it constrains him, but in the sense you can get really creative what you have. And so by doing, instead of doing this, kind of this fantasy-based movie like the first one, you can base it in a, more of a reality-type scenario like he did with that trailer. Which that's what I loved about him, the fact that make him Baraka, a plastic surgeon who goes nuts
and just jacks himself up with blades
and to make Sub-Zero and Scorpion just more of like a crime syndicate type thing.
Yeah.
And so I think by constraining him, I think that kind of pigeonhole, I don't want to say pigeonholes him, but puts him in a corner that could actually work very well in his favor.
Absolutely. And just to give you a comparison, I got to give credit to Screen Rant for pulling these figures. But to give you an idea of what $40 to $50 million can do when put in the right hands, Cabin in the Woods that was released this year, $30 million. Dread that was released this year, $50 million. Looper released this year, $30 million. And I don't think anyone walked out of there thinking, wow, everything looked incredibly cheap.
Yeah.
So in the right hands, I think $40 to $50 million could put together a fantastic movie.
Oh, exactly.
So... All right, now we have a bit of a trailer roundup. We've got two trailers for you. Coincidentally, both zombie trailers. Sort of. The first is the official trailer for World War Z that came out this week. There was also some teaser footage and stuff that came out earlier in the week, and then an official trailer that came out a little later here. Stars Brad Pitt, based off the best-selling zombie novel by Max Brooks. Great book, fantastic book. You watch the trailer, and from what you can tell, it stars Brad Pitt, and really bad effects.
It reminded me more of I Am Legend than anything else. And it's, I mean, because the zombies are just sort of running around in hordes, but not in a 28 days or 28 weeks later type zombie, but more of just like, more like Lion King, you know, when Mufasa dies. Just like, you know, those, I can't remember what animals those are, but just, they're just running through the streets everywhere, running all over each other and piling on like a bunch of ants. And yeah, just I Am Legend with, you know, except instead of Will Smith being by himself, was like the flashback aspects of I Am Legend, you know, where people are trying to get quarantined and all that stuff. And I just don't know how I feel about, the trailer did not make me very excited for this movie.
No, and it's, you know, it's supposed to be a very real world set zombie movie. If this were to happen in the world today, what exactly would happen? What would governments do? How would they react?
Well, that's what the book's very
That's what the book's a lot about. And you can kind of almost get glances of that in the trailer, but not in enough detail to really build a story. And we know that the production's already had all kinds of problems. It took forever to get off the ground. They recently had to halt production, rewrite the ending, and reshoot it just because nothing worked. Nobody liked it. It wasn't playing well. And the trailer, unfortunately, does not help alleviate any fears that came from that.
Yeah, it really doesn't. And I think it's sad because it seems like they're forsaking what would happen, the idea of what would happen if a zombie apocalypse ever came about, to just, okay, survival of Brad Pitt and his family, a la 2012, Day After Tomorrow, stuff like that.
Right.
And I think you could really, like, did you ever see Contagion?
I haven't yet.
Okay, so Contagion was very much about what would happen when you had an epidemic, you know, a huge
outbreak,
yeah. Thank you, of a virus or something like that. But it would go around the different worlds and how, like, different areas, you know, from the family situation to the government situation to the WHO situation, you know, World Health Organization. And that's what made it so cool, was how it affected all these different things. And I feel like World War Z is sacrificing what that could have been like in a zombie situation to just the nuclear family situation, which is cool, but that's been done before.
It has.
It's nothing new to the table.
Well, and I could even cope with it. I could probably even deal with it, but the effects look horrible.
Oh, yeah.
My biggest complaint about I Am Legend, you know, as bad as the story was, as much as it didn't work, the monsters look cheap.
Yes.
There was never at any point where they actually looked and felt real or any real threat. And when you watch the trailer, the zombies or whatever they're supposed to be in this do not look good.
Exactly. And I Am Legend is a perfect example, because the book is awesome. It is one of my favorite books of all time, because it's about a man by himself who is a lone survivor, except instead of a zombie apocalypse, everyone turns into vampires. And it goes into scientific explaining why vampires burst in the flames of the sun, why it's vampire bats, why it's why they need blood, why they're afraid of the cross, and different things like that. And then I Am Legend, forsake all of that, could have been really cool to just... But the movie became, you know, just a survivor movie, and yes, nothing really, you know, they weren't even vampires. They were just weird mutant monster. I don't know what they were.
Yeah. They were bad CGI.
Yeah,
that's what it
exactly
was. Everyone's biggest fear. But that is not the only zombie trailer that came out this week. And this other one gives us a lot of hope. This is a movie that I had never heard about until this week. It's called Warm Bodies. Pretty much, it's the aftermath of the zombie apocalypse. And it's a zombie movie with a heart, sort of?
Yeah. It's like romantic comedy
meets the undead.
Yeah.
the zombie's got an inner monologue, and he comes across a human woman and kind of jumpstarts his heart, so he starts regaining his humanity, more or less. But it looks incredibly funny. It looks very well done. It's got me excited.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, because when I first heard the premise, I thought, okay, this is basically zombie Twilight. So I wasn't too keen on that. But when you watch it, when I talk about something bringing new to the table, this brings something new to the table, because it's through the perspective of a zombie.
Yes.
And that premise, I think, is, and especially from the trailer, it looks like they really caught, have a great idea there, and it looks like they're actually will be able to successfully pull it off, because it looks almost like a Shaun of the Dead, where it's just a really tongue-in-cheek zombie movie. You know, you're not going to watch, I mean, you're watching it for maybe the gore aspect, but at the same time, it's a comedy, you know, I mean.
Yeah.
it kind of pulls everything on its, throws everything on its head.
Yeah, it seamlessly ties together several genres and makes them all work incredibly well, yeah, instead of, you know, getting pigeonholed into, yeah, one specific group. And if this comes off even half as good as that, which, judging by the trailer, it's going to, mm-hmm, it's got me incredibly excited.
Yeah. So more news on my front. This is something that's this is kind of interesting. Is you know that Michael Bay is starting Transformers 4, and there's been issues talk about, okay, well, it's going to be female lead and all this stuff. And I guess a rumor came around that Mark Wahlberg was going to star, but then Michael Bay debunked that. But I guess the fact that that became a rumor made him realize, oh, that'd probably be a good idea. So Mark Wahlberg has now been officially set to star in Transformers 4. And it seems like a lot of this has just kind of been happening to Michael Bay, where he didn't really want to do Transformers 4, but then he went on a ride and thought, maybe I should do Transformers 4. So I think this is potentially what Transformers needs, is we don't have a Shia LaBeouf character who's just a bumbling idiot.
You mean he can put together a coherent sentence,
yeah,
without stammering?
Exactly. And as well as would not, you know, him and not with just some actress who's only there for, you know, to give, you know, for a booty
slow
shot.
Slow motion.
Yeah, exactly. So I think of I love Mark Wahlberg as an actor.
Absolutely.
Ted and The Fighter and all that stuff. I mean, he does a great job.
He knows how to put together a good movie.
Yeah.
He can do bad ones.
Yeah.
Max Payne. But
as well as The Happening.
Yes.
But
his performance is never really the problem.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact is, Mark Wahlberg is an action star. So if you have an action star with Transformers, it might be just the fact that it's just the military and the Transformers working together, which I'm all about that. It's not going to be some college, high school kid.
Turned into an awesome war movie, kind, yeah, of a Battle for Cybertron feel.
Exactly. So I think this potentially could be something, could be something good. So we'll see where that goes from there.
And now, they just finished working together, Mark Wahlberg and Michael Bay, on Pain and Gain.
That's right.
So they've been working together, so they know what each other expects. So we're not going to expect any blow-ups at this point. until we know more, it's the making the best of a bad situation.
Exactly. And then who, maybe fourth time's the charm.
There
so,
you go.
Now, as I said, last week we also talked about Star Wars and the huge news that happened with that. Turns out, I guess, some more things have been creeping up as well. It's actually kind of interesting. I know Carrie Fisher, she was seen at LAX, the Los Angeles airport, and someone went up to her and asked her what she thought about it. She was very kind of cold, basically. Didn't really say much, except when she was asked she would do it, she would just very, I don't want to say sarcastically, but just said, yeah, why wouldn't I, you know? And
it's Star Wars.
Yeah. So she, so her reaction to all this, I guess, hasn't really been as excited or whatnot, but at the same time, she'd been indeed not to jump at the opportunity. But what's really important is the fact that it's been shared who the screenwriter is, and that's basically going to be Michael Arndt, who he wrote Toy Story 3, Little Miss Sunshine, as well as some other great movies. And he even has, I guess he has a 40-page treatment of Star Wars Episode 7, as well as 7, 8, or 8 and 9
already
all written.
Written out, planned out.
Which, again, if you have that started from the beginning, I think that's great, because nothing's worse when a movie's successful and then they just write it after the fact. But when you have everything planned out from the beginning, tighten it all up, I think it's a great way to go. As you said last week, I was not really optimistic about this, but this makes me a lot more optimistic. And Arndt is a great writer, and that was the biggest weakness of the prequels, was the horrible writing.
It was ridiculous.
So
Jar Jar Binks.
We won't say any of that, hopefully. But also, according to some sources, Arndt is co-writing the screenplay adaptation of the Catching Fire sequel to Hunger Games.
Yes.
So, and I guess he's actually was put on this a couple months ago. So yeah. This is months.
So it's months obviously been in the works for a while.
And yeah.
I mean, if he had time to bust out a 40-page treatment plus 8 and 9, who knows? Mm-hmm. I don't think it specifies how long those treatments are. But either way, that's a lot of time and effort. Yeah.
There's a lot of gestation in this,
which is great.
Exactly.
The one possible drawback, and this is what worries me, is they're planning it out as a trilogy, which is great, because you know there's a cohesive story, but sometimes you run into trouble with that. When you look at the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, between 2 and 3, how they just end 2 to lead directly into the third, it was horrible. It didn't work as a standalone story. The Matrix, 2 and 3, same situation.
But I think the problem with that was the first movies were so successful that they tied on the sequels as, you know, and they made those work. And so therefore it made, you know, it made, you know, 2 and 3 felt like their own movie. And number 1 was just kind of more out there, or like Matrix 1
was awesome.
But then 2 and 3 feel like they connect more, and 1's just kind of out there because once those became big, they decided to do sequels to it. So I think the fact, I think if they made the first one and then decided we're going to do a second and third one, I would have issues.
That would be rough.
But the fact that from the very beginning they're doing all the trilogy, I think that would be smart because it'll all kind of lead together, if that makes sense.
Which, you know, in the original trilogy, and even the prequels for all the mistakes, even though they were all three, you know, a large united story, they were good about each one being a standalone story and still connecting with one another. So as long as it continues that same trend, I think they'll be fine.
Well, and like Empire Strikes Back, I mean, that leaves you on a hanging note.
It is, but you do feel closure at the end. When the lights go down or come up at the end, you're not sitting there wondering, I just got left hanging. So
that's true. So I think, and you know, Dark Knight as well, you know, that with Heath Ledger, or when you know, obviously Batman runs off to escape. So I think it's successful. I just think the problem with, I think that's a big problem with Pirates of the Caribbean and The Matrix was I felt like the sequels were products on the, because of due to the success of the first ones.
Yeah.
Whereas even if those other movies didn't necessarily have, it's like also Back to the Future. Second and third one were because of the success of the first one.
Right.
And they're definitely weaker than the first one.
Yes.
But I think if they are able to make it work, and by maybe have the fact we are going to have a trilogy, I don't see that as a problem. But we'll see what happens, though. But also, I know that there are also some people, I guess, basically, Brad Bird, J.J. Abrams are thinking, or I guess have been maybe approached about directing the movie. Supposedly Steven Spielberg, but he debunked that, which I'd be very surprised if he even did in the first place. So yeah, so there's a lot of news as well, and I have a lot more hope this week than I did last week. Moving on, though, so that I could talk about that forever. Mark Miller actually is discussing basically a huge, massive Marvel crossover with his goals of that, with him, and not only with Marvel, but with Sony as well. Basically, I guess in a recent interview, an Empire podcast, when they're talking about Matthew Vaughn dropping out for X-Men Days of Future Past, which we'll be talking about that later. I guess what he said is, you know, Fox are thinking, we're sitting on some really awesome things here. There's another side of the Marvel Universe. Let's try and get some cohesiveness going. So that's why they brought him in to see that. And you know, he just said he doesn't want to make it too much of a mess, and he doesn't want everyone, you know, showing up in everyone's films. But he said, what my dream is, right, as a fan, my dream is that when you go and see any Marvel movie, that it feels as if they're all taking place in the one universe, like when you pick up a Marvel comic. And that doesn't necessarily mean that pick up an X-Men comic and see a Spider-Man in every issue and all that, and it shouldn't not be like that in the movies either. Now, what I thought was the most interesting is he says, now, Fox, Sony, and Marvel, I think, should all be best friends and all take a share of the responsibility. And a lot of people say, I like to see it all back at one studio, as we've discussed in recent podcasts. But I'll tell you why that's not a good idea. The big thing is cost. These things are ludicrously expensive, so most studios aren't going to do more than 2 or possibly 3 a year, which means that you wouldn't be getting the Guardians of the Galaxy, you wouldn't be getting Ant-Man, and any of these very interesting new projects. What you'd be getting if it were all one studio, Spider-Man, X-Men, The Avengers may be happening, and that would be it. So I love the fact these studios essentially at the moment be possibly 4 shouldering the financial burden of the Marvel Universe. And I think it's a very valid point, because Marvel can do their own thing, Sony and Fox can do their own thing. As long as you sit there and they all sit together and agree, like, we're going to make this all part of the same universe, maybe have cameos, or the, you know, not just having the Avengers crossover, but have the Avengers crossover with X-Men and Spider-Man, that could be really cool. And then each one can burden their own financial cost and therefore make more comic book movies, which is great for comic book fans.
Absolutely. I think you're right. I think it's exactly on the right track, having it set in the same universe, but not necessarily in the same movies.
Yeah.
I think it's a fantastic way to tie everything together without making it feel overloaded.
And I think it'll be good as well, because what that will do is then make Spider-Man and X-Men and Fantastic Four more true to the comic source material, which that was a big... And Spider-Man's already trying to do that, especially with this... And the Mary Jane and the Gwen Stacy, you know, her death and whatnot. So I think they're really trying to do that. And I think if X-Men, if they do that as well with this new movie, I think, or even with the Wolverine, set that up, I think would be a really genius idea. So, so I think that's great news there, great possibility. And I think Mark Miller's a very valid point. So just to kind of end with the news real quick, speaking of Matthew Vaughn, I guess the real reason why he left X-Men was not to do Star Wars.
Which is a little sad, because we like Matthew Vaughn.
Yeah, exactly. But the real reason is because he co-created this comic with Mark Miller and Dave Gibbons called The Secret Service. And they wanted to do a movie about it. Well, it turns out, I guess, another studio is trying to do a movie based on a similar idea as well. And so he left that project to try and beat them and get this movie going, because nothing's worse, I think, when you're a creator and someone rips off your idea, a la Ants vs. Bug's Life or Shark's Tale and Finding Nemo. So what DreamWorks really kind of seem to do with the Pixar movies. So I think Matthew Vaughn's really trying to push ahead and not do that. So, which again, I give him complete credit. And I think it's a really good idea. So, well, that's it with our news for this week. Now we'll be moving on to a review section where we'll be discussing Skyfall, the latest James Bond movie.
All right, we are here with our review of Skyfall, the latest James Bond movie. In Skyfall, Bond's loyalty to M is tested as her past comes back to haunt her. As MI6 comes under attack, 007 must track down and destroy the threat, no matter how personal the cost. Stars Daniel Craig, Javier Bardem, Naomi Harris, Dame Judi Dench, Ralph Fiennes. Phenomenal cast. I don't think you could ask for any better. The director, Sam Mendes, absolutely fantastic. Directed American Beauty, Reservation Road. So very accomplished director, very accomplished actors. So all that's left is, how well does it work on the screen?
You know, and that's kind of my my thing about this movie was I felt like there's so much hype about it, and I love Daniel Craig as Bond. He's my favorite Bond of all time. You know, Casino Royale was a great movie. I mean, that's my favorite Bond movie of all time. Quantum of Solace, a little disappointing. And this one, so I was really hoping that it would be the kind of redemption of what Quantum of Solace wasn't.
Yeah, and we spend, you know, hours a week digging through sites, digging through reviews, digging through blogs and posts and, you know, getting as much information as possible. And all week, that's what I don't know about you, but that's everything I came across. It's the best Bond movie ever.
Yeah.
Everyone's saying it. Roger Moore, a previous James Bond, said this is the best one yet.
And I didn't get that.
No.
I was just struggling to see how people thought, because it dived into his character the most.
Which was good.
Yeah. And you actually understand more of background of who James Bond is.
Yes.
And so it's much more, it's the most character-driven James Bond movie ever, especially with James Bond and with M. But because of that, the problem was they didn't dive into their characters enough once they went into those waters.
They opened the door, but not wide enough to let everyone in.
Exactly. And then there's no character development with any other character, except for the villain.
Yes.
And so I felt like they had this potential, but they just didn't. I mean, like, in the whole Skyfall premise of what Sky, I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but what Skyfall is, was this kind of like a, really? I mean,
it kind of throws you off, because they bring it up toward the beginning of the movie, and you're like,
Yeah.
But it doesn't give you any hints, and then toward the end, when you find out what it is, you're kind of left scratching your head, like, really? That was it?
Yeah. And, like, if this is such a big premise, like, why is it so important to James Bond? Or why does he have the feelings that he does about Skyfall? And that was my frustration about it, is they didn't go enough into it. That being said, though, I will say that one thing I did love about it, and if you are a huge fan of James Bond, I think you'll really appreciate the fact all the homages they have to the other movies. And it's the 50th anniversary. I mean, there's a scene where Javier reminds me, like, basically looks like Jaws for a second. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
But you see that, it's like, it looks like he look. Basically, it's a reference to Jaws. You have, who's my favorite villain?
Oh, absolutely.
Especially with the 007 GoldenEye video game. Even though you're an easy target, I just love being Jaws. You have other references to other movies. I don't want to go into it, but you have other movies.
Previous movies, previous items.
And yeah.
Characters that...
Exactly.
And they're fun. If you're a Bond fan, you chuckle, you laugh.
Yeah.
It draws you in more.
And it's funny because they're very self-aware of the fact as well of being James Bond. You know, like when he's talking to Q and they're talking about the gadgets and whatnot, you know, just gives him a gun and James Bond gives him a weird look and Q's like, what, you're expecting an exploding pen? I mean, you know, we move beyond that, basically.
Yeah, kind of a tongue-in-cheek laugh at, you know, previous Bond films and some of the absurdity that's taken place.
Exactly. So I really appreciate that. I love the fact they go into a character, but, you know, if you're expecting action, the first 15 minutes are incredible.
Yes, the beginning action scene, I think, is hands down one of the best in any Bond film to date. Yeah. It was fantastic, well choreographed, incredibly shot, very well acted. Like, my knuckles were gripping the seat for the first
30 motorcycle chase and the train. It was awesome. But then there wasn't anything to match that, even close to matching that afterwards. Even the last battle scene was just more of a Home Alone situation, which is a little weird.
It's good, but it doesn't have the power behind it that you really expected or that you wanted after having such a strong beginning.
Exactly. And the other problem I had as well was the fact that I just didn't feel like in general there wasn't a lot of action. There's little bits and pieces, but nothing of a Bond caliber from previous movies.
No, the pacing, there were times when the pacing just seemed incredibly off.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want you to think that I just completely hated this. I thought visually it was amazing.
Yeah.
I thought by far probably the most attractive looking Bond movie.
Oh, and Hobbs
to date. It's the scenery looks great. They make the characters look great. Even those that are, you know, supposed to be flawed and look flawed, they do. Yeah, so not everything's polished, but it's shot incredibly well. Whoever the director of photography was amazing. The eye
has
a lot to say.
And Javier, as the villain, did a fantastic job.
Yes.
He just nailed his part.
If you're a James Bond fan, you know, when you think of James Bond villains, you think of Jaws, you think of Odd Job, you think of Blofeld.
Yeah.
You know,
Dr. No.
You know, these amazing, amazing characters. And you haven't really had anyone up to that caliber for a long time.
Especially with the Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace, they weren't Bond villains.
No, I mean, they were nice and all, you know, and they served their purpose, but they were just a face to be in over the organization. Javier Bardem just nails it.
Yeah. And it's interesting because the director said, you know, he looked a lot towards The Dark Knight, and you really do see that with Javier. There's a little aspects around me, a little bit of the Joker, but at the same time, it was a little bit too much like The Dark Knight in the sense of, you know, there's a scene in Shanghai. Again, I don't want to spoil it, but let's just say that I first didn't recognize, but the more I thought about it, I realized it really was a James Bond version of The Dark Knight in a sense, and that was a little distracting. The other thing I didn't like as well was Quantum of Solace and Casino Royale were very much sequels or tied in the same type of story.
Yes.
And I guess because I was expecting Skyfall to continue that, and it really didn't.
It takes a complete separate approach, which, you know, I think there's a line in Skyfall that says when Q gives James Bond his new gun, you know, and he says, you know, less of a blunt instrument, more of a personal statement.
Yeah.
And which I think overall, I think the movie accomplished. It went from being a Bond caricature to try and give Bond some feeling, more of a personal a personal touch.
Yeah.
Which was good. I just don't think it did it quite to the point that it needed to.
Yeah. But I say it's very much a movie for Bond fans.
Yes.
So I think at the end of the day, if you're a huge Bond fan, I would say see it because you'll appreciate all the references, you'll recognize them, you know, you'll love them and whatnot. But, you know, I would say for me, at the end of the day, if it was to see it, stream it, or skip it, I guess I would say stream it. I mean, either wait for the Dollar Theater, wait for Redbox, or wait for Netflix. That's just my personal opinion. I mean, it said it was good, but I didn't think it was fantastic.
You don't know if it was $10 good?
Yeah, I really don't. I don't think so.
I kind of set myself right on the line of somewhere between see it and stream it. So I'm stuck on that border. And I think the tipping of the scale goes to how big of a Bond fan you are.
Yeah.
I think if you're a Bond fan, I think if you go see it, you won't be necessarily disappointed. It probably won't be your favorite one, but I think you will enjoy it. If you just like action movies, you can probably wait and stream it and save yourself the money and be all right.
Because in terms of action, doesn't really bring anything new to the table. But that's the weird thing. I think this movie in the end will be like The Dark Knight Rises. You'll either love it and think it's the greatest movie ever in terms of the Bond series, or you'll be like, meh. So, and I guess I'm just kind of more the meh. But
so, well, that ends our review of Skyfall. Now we are going to move on to our From the Vault section, where we're going to step back 6 years and review what kicked off the rebirth of Bond with Casino Royale.
Welcome to our From the Vault section. Again, we will be talking about Casino Royale. And even though it's not an older movie, and there's plenty of other James Bond movies we could be discussing. We said Dr. No, Moonraker.
One of my personal favorites.
Star Wars meets James Bond.
Death Star.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's so many classic James. My favorite is the Voodoo one.
Yes.
I love that one. You know, basically the little Dukes of Hazzard, Sheriff and whatnot. But we decided to do Casino Royale because that really, I mean, after Pierce Brosnan, so GoldenEye was great, but Tomorrow Never Dies and The World Is Not Enough. Just tanked.
Yeah.
Just like Halle Berry's career recently. So,
yeah.
So we thought this is a good one to talk about because this is what really rebooted the James Bond. And as well, because a lot of people are really big fans of Daniel Craig, of him being James Bond, because he's not that polished Brit.
Yeah. You know, it was very rough in the beginning when he was announced and you started seeing pictures where, you know, I know my mom, who's a James Bond fan, said, a blonde James Bond?
Yeah.
It just didn't work for her.
Exactly. But that's the thing is, I mean, watching this movie again, this is my favorite James Bond movie of all time. The action's great. Daniel Craig, I just think, nails the character. And the reason why I love it so much is because it was just so different than what I was expecting. When I walked in there, again, I mean, I think the biggest point is when James Bond's at the casino, and they said, shaken or stirred, and of course the typical line, or no, when they ask how he wants his,
you know, shaken, not stirred.
Exactly, and he says, I don't give a damn, and, you know, and it's just like, it was so classic because you are not expecting that at all, and you realize, I mean, this is a different James Bond.
For a different generation.
Yeah, he gets tortured, you know, he gets roughed up.
Oh, he gets tortured.
Oh, yeah.
If you've never seen it, I don't want to spoil it for you, but watch it.
That was the just most for painful, the torture scene. Yeah, that was one of the most painful, and the way he acts on it, too, you know, it's just so great. But the other thing, too, about it is the fact that he actually cared about a woman, where before, and with Skyfall as well, he slept with whoever he wanted. That's his James Bond.
That was his thing.
He didn't care about him. But
it's Bond.
Yeah. But in this one, he really genuinely cared about this girl, and it was totally flipped the whole thing on his face. And so it was a totally different James Bond and something very, very, very new and fresh.
Absolutely. You know, and I can imagine, you know, depending on when you grew up, your favorite James Bond is going to vary, you know,
yeah.
And everyone loves Sean Connery for who he was. But before the recent iteration of James Bond, you know, things just became sad. It became a caricature of a movie. What kind of crazy gadgets can we throw in? How can we one up our last movie?
Yeah.
And you had Pierce Brosnan come along and you had GoldenEye, which was great. Everyone liked
that
it.
That was like our generation revamp of James Bond.
Exactly. And it worked, and everyone loved it. And then it just kind of went downhill with the next ones. And then you get brought back.
It was very much like what the 20 years or whatever James Bond did of like slowly going downhill, the Pierce Brosnan area did in three movies.
Exactly. It was an impressive fall from grace.
Yeah.
And the recent iteration, by no means, has dropped so bad. I mean, the fall off from the first to the second may have been bad, but you know, there's the writer strike and other stuff that played into it.
And Quantum of Solace is still like, it's still a decent James Bond movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's
not terrible.
By any means. But it's just not good when you stack it up against Casino Royale.
Yeah.
But when I sat down to watch Casino, I went and saw it with my mother and father. You know, I'd say maybe 2 or 3 weeks after it came out, they saw it, they loved it, so we all went to go see it. The very beginning. Very, very beginning when he's in the office. And then it kind of recounts how he got his 00 status.
Yeah.
The whole black and white fight scene. That whole scene, that from beginning to end of that beginning, hooked me.
Yeah.
I was drawn in. It was the best James Bond scene. Still, to me, that right there is what James Bond is. Nothing has lived up to that scene.
Well, that movie, or that part, but even just the beginning chase scene, I still actually like that more than the motorcycle chase scene, because you have the guy doing all these crazy acrobatics through like Zimbabwe or whatever it is, and then James Bond just like plows through a wall.
Runs through a wall.
Which
again, you know, your blunt instrument versus the more precise.
Yeah, it's true. So
he's a suave in a suit doing all this stuff in Skyfall, and he's, you know, rugged out just busting through walls.
Yeah.
And
And that's the James Bond, at least for me, that's why I love Bruce Willis and Die Hard, that's why I love Indiana Jones, that's why I love Daniel Craig, because when you just have a suave action star who really only gets hurt, never gets hurt except for the very end of The Boss, just to create some drama, when you see them kind of get beat up throughout the process, and this kind of more human, weakened character, even if they survive these totally ridiculous things, just seeing them go through that makes him much more of a human character, and you're much more relatable, I guess, because, like, you know, it's not Arnold Schwarzenegger or you know, Steven Seagal or something like that, where they just, like, beat the crap out of everybody. You know, it's them struggling through this.
Make it through.
Yeah, and that's what I loved about Daniel Craig compared to the other James Bonds, was he was that rough guy, you know, just trying to make things through. Like, you know, he's getting tortured and he's getting the crap beat out of him, but he still comes out on top.
Yeah, well, and it really was a reboot. Kind of took it back to the beginning before he was suave, before he was debonair. You know, how did he work his way to this? I mean, you can see bits and pieces of the previous characters in there, but as a whole, he was very much raw.
Yeah.
Now, as far as story goes, how would you rate it? Like, based solely on the A to Z story?
In terms of the
Casino Royale, just as a whole,
you know, actually, I really love the story. I mean, it's nothing. It's your typical James Bond story,
right? Probably the weakest of all the aspects.
Yeah, I would say it's the weakest of all the aspects, but it worked though.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't. It wasn't a thinker by any means. But you know, it also as well, and it was based off one of the original James Bond books.
Right.
So, you know, I really like the story. I didn't really have any problems with it. Where some of the other James Bonds, I had some issues with some of their stories.
Moonraker.
Oh, yeah. That's one of those things come to my mind. It was Moonraker. So, and again, I guess, you know, if we just talk about Skyfall, I mean, obviously it's a weaker story than Skyfall is.
Yeah, I think, yeah. I'd say, yeah, story-wise, it's probably a little weaker than the story in Skyfall. Yet, my opinion, better executed
than
Skyfall.
I think it's a great way.
Which I think you get away with a weaker story as long as you hit all your points
and
hit them well, which I think Skyfall kind of struggled a little bit.
Yeah, but the action at Casino Royale was some of the best action.
Oh, yeah.
I think of the reboot between the Skyfall, Quantum of Solace, and Casino Royale. Casino Royale, hands down, I think execution... and action, I think is the best of the three.
Absolutely.
So, and I if you ever get, if you don't own this, if you get a chance to rent it, especially with Skyfall,
buy it, bin it, skip it.
This is one you need to own. I think if there's a James Bond movie you need to own, I think it's Casino Royale.
All right, now here's the chance to put him on the hot seat. Do you actually own Casino Royale?
It is on my list to own. Because here's the thing. So, obviously now with H, you know, you have to buy the Blu-ray and the HD movies now. It is on my wish list to own. So I do not own it yet. But with Skyfall coming out, I realized that, like, oh, I need to buy that movie. I don't know why I don't own it. So when I say that, I'm saying it to myself as well. So
this just so you all know, this is the only James Bond movie that I own. I own it on Blu-ray. I had to get it in high definition. And I love it. I probably watch it at least twice a year.
Oh, yeah.
So, it's a good sick day movie where you can just lay on a couch, do nothing, and watch things explode and run around and cheer for James Bond.
So you're going to ever get the 25-movie Blu-ray James Bond set?
Probably not. I mean, as much as I enjoy James Bond, most of the movies I enjoy one-off. Or I enjoy when Spike does the, you know, 50 years of James Bond and runs
but
all
they're
the
not ones you're going to just pop in.
No, I mean... Probably because I was born later, I just don't quite have that same connection. You know, my dad could watch them over and over again. We had them all recorded on VHS and stuff like that. But I probably won't own any of those. I own Skyfall, or I own Casino Royale. Skyfall, we'll see. Maybe I'll bin it when it comes later. We'll find out when that time comes around.
Yeah, I think, you know, if it was connected to the other two, then I would buy that trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that I feel I need to own Casino Royale, I don't feel I need to own... Quantum of Solace, because it's not a great sequel. It's okay, but it's not great. But Skyfall, I think if it was connected to this Casino Royale, then I feel like I would buy all three. But because it's a standalone, Well, that's why I won't own it.
That's what was so ingenious about it. Is, you know, all the other Bonds, for the most part, were just one-off movies. I mean, you may have, you know, Jaws showed up in a couple, or Odd Job showed up in a couple, you know, some crossing characters, but for the most part, it was, you know, standalone stories, whereas, you know, with the reboot, it started out interconnected, and then they all of a sudden just cut that out with no reason. There was no tie-up to it.
Yeah.
You know, if they could have tied it off or put it on hold or something like that, I think that would have been beneficial.
Exactly.
The fact that it was just so in left field, I think, hurt people going in expecting.
Yeah. So, but I would say, I mean, you know, own it, bin it, or rent it, or I would say definitely own it.
Definitely.
This is what you need
it.
On your shelf.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is our podcast for the week. Thank you for joining us in Between the Reels. We hope you all enjoyed this, and we look forward to see you next week. Until then, happy viewing. Thank you for joining us in this episode of Between the Reels. As always, we are produced under Creative Commons license. Our bumper music is provided by Kevin MacLeod.
Make sure to like us on Facebook at Between the Reels Podcast, and follow us on Twitter at BTWN Reels. Happy listening, and see you next time.